Hi, and welcome to What in the World, the podcast where we talk about all sorts of esoteric things. I am Ayama Natara. I have with me Dave Burke and Lisa Frith. What are we talking about today, Dave?
There's an article here about the mysterious dimming of Betelgeuse.
Oh, God.
And don't say it twice. Twice more, because, you know, that starts all sorts of bad stuff. But so basically, late last year, the people noticed that Betelgeuse was looking significantly dimmer. And they thought it was on the verge of going supernova, because they thought it was winding down and then it was gonna go boom. And everyone was excited, except it didn't go boom, and the star actually brightened right back up back in February, back to its normal place. So apparently the theory is right now they caught a big black or kind of a murky spot blocking it from our view, which is what caused the dimming. Mm-hmm. So the theory right now that this article was working with was that Betelgeuse actually had an ejection that created a humongous dust cloud big enough to cover like a quarter of its surface and prevent, you know, and then subsequently it prevents light from radiating out and all that. And it lasted, I want to say, somewhere between 4 and 6 months. You know, and it was significant enough that we saw it with our telescopes here. And it got me to thinking, what is stopping our sun from doing something similar? And the consequences of that, I mean, would people absolutely freak out? Because we know we're not, as a society, at least in our part of the world, we're not the best at handling science right now. So even if the scientists are saying, don't worry about it, it's just a dust cloud, it's going to dissipate, but we're going to have to put up with the pain that causes.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's going to be some actual physics and biological ramifications of that happening, if that were to happen here.
Yep.
You know, and people freaking out is the least of my concern. You know, crops dying, and people freezing to death is a greater concern to me. But it's interesting when you talk about that star. I'm not going to be superstitious or anything, but
We haven't said it all. We haven't said it in a row, so it's okay.
But when you talk about that, I what I see is like, the image that I get is like, you know those plants that like poof out pollen?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like to me. It's just like, you know, it coughed. What's preventing our sun from doing that? Well, it's got people to protect, for one. You know, in one sense, you can look at Earth as being a manifestation of our higher selves. And then you go the next level up and it's actually soul. It's the sun that is a manifestation of our higher self at the next level up. And then you go to the heart of the galaxy and that gets really fun because that's a black hole. And we won't go there right now, although I could. You know, were the sun to do that, it would be along the lines of giving yourself cancer. You know, you're killing off part of your smaller parts by doing that. And right now the sun is perfectly content to let Terra do that for it. From a physics point of view, from a science point of view, what's preventing it from doing that? I don't know. I don't know enough about, like, you know, what the sun can and can't do. Most of the time when our sun you know, blows stuff out, it's magma. It's not, you know, it's liquidy hot stuff. It's not dust. I don't know that it's capable or has the material to do a dusty poof. It could do a magma poof, and it does frequently, but nothing on that scale. And we're in a solar minimum right now anyway. Yeah, and you know, if that did happen here for whatever reason, yeah, people might freak out and people might act superstitiously, and it would be kind of hysterical because it would also fuck up a lot of our technology, because much of our stuff is electromagnetic, and anytime the sun does something, it makes all of that wonky. And if it did something, an event of that size, regardless of what the material was, it would absolutely affect radio frequencies, electronics, you know, all kinds of stuff. And we would grind to a halt for a little bit. You know, it would essentially come through as an EMP.
Yeah, sixth extinction check. Checkmate, right?
You know, I mean, it wouldn't kill us, but it would put us dead in the water, and we'd have to figure out other shit, and the survivalists would be happy, you know, because they've all been prepping for that stuff.
Mormons everywhere would rejoice, right? No. 7 years.
But yeah, I mean, that would affect us for, I feel like it would affect us for a good century or two, at least.
Wow.
Well, they find there is that layer that's pretty consistent across the planet with the ash from some giant eruption way back in the day that definitely coincides with civilization. And I think they find little diamonds in it too, right? Little meteorite diamonds? Dang.
There was a lot of compression, yes.
Yeah, but it's a layer that's in the geographic record all across the planet. So whatever happened, whether it was from out there coming in or an eruption from here, it covered the planet for sure.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, there's the hypothesis that something like that is what killed off the dinosaurs, other than alligators and sharks, but and chickens apparently. Having something like that now would absolutely screw up the planet. No, the planet would be fine, honestly. It would,
yeah. Yeah.
The planet always recovers. She's good, you know.
She's doing great right now, right?
Yeah, it's those of us compared to where we were back that, you know, are going to be hosed. But I don't see anything like that happening for quite some time, not for this civilization anyway. In a couple of other timelines,
okay. Guess,
but I don't see it in ours.
One last thing to worry about. We have enough.
Although, you know, I mean, it's 2020, so who knows, you know. The timeline in which this exists is weird and unanticipated and all kinds of fascinating. You know, when I look at the dystopian predictors, some of our wonderful science fiction writers, you know, this is not, we jumped a timeline somewhere because this isn't what they were seeing, and they're usually pretty accurate, so... Does anybody know what Nostradamus has said about this shit?
No idea.
Oh, fascinating. No idea.
I'd actually like to know Casey, if he's seen anything, because he was closer to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes being closer to it isn't necessarily helpful, though.
Right.
I mean, you want to talk about closer to it, you know, our science fiction writers are awfully close to it, and they've been pretty accurate about a lot of stuff, and this was like
Right.
left fucking field for most of them. Especially just because it's not... just one thing. We've got so many things going on simultaneously. It's so fascinating. And I mean, one of the things that I've been seeing, here you go, tangent girl. One of the things that I've been seeing as I look forward on the timeline is that this sets up a domino effect of, this is the first big virus in this series, but there's going to be more. You know, we're going to be, you know, it's so funny. I was talking to somebody yesterday who was like, I'm waiting for us to go back to normal. And I'm like, uh-uh. You know, by the time that this event is winding down, which is going to be like 2023 minimum, everything that we thought was our normal isn't going to exist anymore because of the economics of it. You know, live music is dead. Concerts are dead. They will not exist in the way that they've existed. The venues will be gone, if nothing else. You know, all of the tours
like office will be buildings. Gone.
Yeah. You know, our society is going to look very different. And that's actually a good thing, because when the next wave of disease comes through, and it's going to, and they're going to be, you know, global time-wise rapid fire, you know, we will be a little bit more prepared. You know, we need to learn from this event because it's going to be important going forward.
Learn to be more like Japan. Yep.
More like Japan, sure.
Well, I mean, they haven't really had any huge problem. I mean, they have their problems, but culturally, they've adapted to this pretty well overall because they have that culture.
Yeah, South Korea is another good example who we should be emulating. They were already wearing masks. Half of Asia was already wearing masks, you know. Yep. And I start wearing masks, you know, I started wearing masks a couple of years ago during flu season because it made sense to me. I didn't want your cooties, and if I happen to have some, I ain't sharing. And, it, you know, had we adopted that particular thing more quickly, or, you know, like back when, you know, before all of this bullshit hit, you know, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. And, you know, I'm going to rant for just a minute here, but when did your freedom mean that you get to get me sick? As a woman, I'm going to go with, you know, I have to wear a bra so you're not distracted by my nipples. You can fucking wear a mask so I don't die.
Wear your helmet on a motorcycle, wear your seatbelt in a car. I mean, come on.
Dress codes in school. You know, I can't wear spaghetti straps because it's going to distract somebody. Again, there is no death involved in that.
Right.
You know, when did your freedom mean that you didn't have to do something minor in order to prevent death? It's minor. Oh my God.
It's
a fucking mask. Yep. I have COPD and I can wear a mask with no problem. Put a fucking mask on.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'll jump on the tail end of your rant. I'm just so flabbergasted. I mean, if anything, what's happened the past couple of years leading up to this crazy place where we are, where so many people that I know and love are just, if you have to wear a mask, it's communism, anti-America. I don't know how all that has happened. It just blows my mind when doctors wear them all day, nurses wear them all day, people who work in clean rooms wear them all day. And then they're coming up with all these little sheets that say, oh, the Pulmonary Journal says don't wear them. What?
Trying to justify their five-year-old, I don't want to.
It's so not kind. It's kindness and love is always the answer, and that's not kind. I don't know. It's interesting.
There's a theory going around on the internet that, you know, not among the QAnoners, but, you know, among rational humans, that the ethos behind it is literally, I don't like the people who are saying, please wear a mask, and so I'm not gonna, because I'd like them to die, and fuck them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that level of hatred is one of the reasons why we are unappealing to a large portion of the universe. You know, those people would be willing to blow themselves up in order to hurt the people they don't like. I could probably understand that. I refuse to wrap my head around that. I refuse to put myself in those shoes because that is abhorrent to me.
I'm on the same page. Yeah. As a mushy empath person, it really hurts. Just because it's such an literally in your face thing with so many people.
Not that people on a podcast can see me motioning of putting a mask on my face, but yes. What else you got, Dave?
Yeah, next.
I got that people need to stop behaving like adolescents. That's what I got. Okay, so, all right. So I'm not as informed on this as I would like to be because I just pulled it up. But going back up into space, getting off the Earth, there is a weird thing happening. Go figure.
Only one?
And... Yeah. Well, there's this particular one. And I don't know how familiar you are with fast radio bursts. They happen every once in a while. They're detected by our astronomers. And they happen way outside our galaxy. There's theories as to what they are. But energetically, they are much more powerful, what are they saying, than the energy that our sun puts out in a certain amount of time, and it was like a year or 10 years or something like that. It was, it's an incredible amount of energy.
Solar system is very low power, so sure, go ahead.
Yeah, and these things happen, and they last usually for milliseconds. But now is the first time that they've detected one within the Milky Way. And it lasted for, they're saying, about a half second rather than milliseconds. I have to look at it a little more closely, but I mean, the kind of general gist is it sounds like it's getting closer and closer. They detected this thing a few times, a couple of times, something like that. They don't know what it is. They don't know where the energy is coming from. It's just kind of weird that
all the same pattern every time.
I'm going to have to look at it a little more closely. And this is why I like to read before.
For sure. I don't think it's the same pattern every time, which means it's not getting closer. It's multiple things, multiple events, multiple.
Right. But this is the first time it's ever happened in our galaxy, which is kind of got them up in arms about this. Okay, yeah, they don't know.
So first of all, our solar system is extremely low powered because the energy is so dense, because if it wasn't dense, we wouldn't have this whole bullshit of this illusion of space and time, and we wouldn't be able to learn things on the heavily experiential level that we're learning them from a soul point of view. And so everything here is slower, which means something that's a millisecond or a microsecond out there is going to be much longer, slower here. Because, you know, and obviously the thing that we've detected in the Milky Way isn't here in our solar system, but it has a domino effect. So the Milky Way in general is a slower system than other systems, which is why we're not as dense. Whatever it was in this system, it took that long for it to get here to do its thing. But it's not the same thing that's happening out there. The thing that happened here, when I say it took that long for it to get here, it's not that it traveled from there. It's that it had to evolve in this slower system in order to be able to do the thing. You know, and if something's happening like way outside of our galaxy and we're picking it up, it happened a really long time ago, right?
Right.
And so it being closer, it took that much longer for it to evolve into a space where it would do the thing. So when I say it took long for it to get here, it's not that it was coming from elsewhere. It's just it had to grow into that space. Right. Am I making sense?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. So in kind of skimming this, the scientists think that it's coming from an actual neutron star, this latest thing.
Oh.
And they're saying the only reason they caught it was they happen to have a number of telescopes aimed that way. And this radio burst happened over multiple spectrums and across a number of wavelengths, including, they said, this particular, they're calling it a magnetar because it's a neutron star. The Death Star woke up with a powerful X-ray blast in April.
Okay. I would love to see them like unpack these packets, because there's a whole bunch of information, data, communication in these bursts, whether it's here or elsewhere, and they haven't figured out how to unlock it and unpack it yet. But it's essentially a data dump.
I feel like it's a beacon of some sort.
It's like, no, it's like computer packets. You know, there's a whole stuff in there. That they have to like unlock and expand, you know, and they haven't figured out how to do that yet. But that's what that is. That's why it's hitting multiple spectrums.
Yeah. So you seem to be indicating that it's something that's designed to get attention, whether it's us or not.
This is where we get into multiple levels of information or multiple levels of any piece of information. Designed, yeah, it's designed. I don't think it's designed by beings as we think of beings. I think it's what we would call a natural phenomenon.
Sure.
And it has a lot of data in it that's very important if we can figure out how to break it down. You know, and I'd love to see, like, if Graham Hancock could get his you know, hands on the data, what he would do, because there's absolutely something with 72 in there.
Okay.
Part of the key is 72.
Well, unfortunately, he's the one that usually concentrates on Earth.
I know.
And stuff here. So it would be interesting.
Grab it. Do something with it.
Call his wife. Maybe she'll get him to do it.
Samantha.
I think I still got her cell phone around somewhere. But yeah, it is a quote unquote natural phenomena, but it has information, you know, if you want to get really mystical, from the divine.
Mm-hmm.
About how to fix things, about the foundation for existence, about there's some stuff in there.
Right.
It'd be really super awesome, powerful stuff, which of course means that, you know, given our current culture, atmosphere, situation, you know, if it does get unlocked, we're not going to fucking hear about it anyway. But I would love for somebody who's not part of the power structure to be playing with that and to get that information out there, because it can be really fun to play with.
Right. So I finally found the sentence I was looking for. And I was trying not to overstate the amount of energy in these things, but previous ones, and by the way, these have only been discovered since 2007.
Okay.
They usually only last a few milliseconds, but they generate more energy in that time than Earth's sun does in a century.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure.
So that is a huge, that's just a ginormous amount of energy in
some energy right there, yeah.
What we see in a small blast, you know? Yeah, that's the thing that just kind of amazes me, is the amount of energy that is being released in that burst, and that's how much we see here.
Sure.
You know, so what is that energy burst like at the point of origin?
It's like a Big Bang.
Yeah.
So one of the other things that keeps coming up every time you start talking about it and reading about it, and by the time I start talking, it falls out of my head, but it didn't this time, is that, you know, we are the ones who are stuck with the illusion of separation. We are the ones who have this weird illusion of time and space. It doesn't exist elsewhere because there isn't the density to require it. But our perception of what happens elsewhere still has to go through that space-time thing. And Spirit's saying there's something very important there that, you know, I need to point out to people, and I don't know what the very important part is, but it's important that I say the thing that, you know, space and time are an illusion that we have taken on, and as such, that's going to make it harder for us to unpack those packets too, because the reason that it's short is because there's, you know, it doesn't need to be long. There's so much information stacked one piece on top of the other. And it is sort of interdimensional, because it can be, because it's not constricted by our concept of space time. And I'm probably saying really weird things now that don't make any sense. But I don't know how to, it'll take me a while to unpack that so that I can dumb it down so that most people aren't like, what the fuck is she talking about? But yeah, I mean, it's an amazing amount of power because of its origin. It's a mini Big Bang. It's, here's all of the information about your universe, unpack it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what a neutron star is, basically, is a mini Big Bang?
It's I actually like the description that they have in that article. It's like, if you take a baseball that is the size of a city, that is what it's like. And it's just it's not a black hole, because it hasn't really collapsed in on itself, but it's compacted so much that it's relatively the size of a baseball compared to like our sun or, you know, other actual fusion stars.
Sure.
And I'm totally botching this explanation, but it's a lot of energy compressed into a very small space.
And I'm not sure that most people, because of the weird constrictions of time and space, have a really good sense of what something that has that much mass and that small of a space is, what that feels like, what that's about. You know, and even when you do have some concept of it, it's a little disconcerting because it doesn't match what you think it's supposed to match. So, I mean, the closest that I think that most people can come to is imagine picking up a gold brick. It's way heavier than you expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the opposite of picking up a piece of pumice, you know, but it's on a scale that doesn't even begin to approach.
Right.
The feeling of something that's that dense doesn't match with our experience of anything in terms of like what, you know, and if you don't have experiential understanding of something, it's like, you can't actually understand like how much money billionaires have. You just can't.
Right.
Which is why people come up with analogies of like, okay, so you're in Egypt during the pharaohs and you put $10,000 in the bank every day. You still don't have that much money. That's the only way people can explain it. And that mass and that density, I used to have what came through to me as nightmares as a kid of dealing with that level of density.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no way for my human child experiential brain to unpack that. But that's what this was, is dealing with different densities of stars and matter and stuff. I just knew that it came in waves and it was really uncomfortable. But to unpack information from something that is that dense, it's going to have multiple levels of information, you know, because it's dense. It's,
yep.
You know, Dostoevsky's got nothing on that.
Right. So, just trying to get a better understanding of what's being talked about is, so a neutron star is a star that has collapsed, and it's usually a supergiant star that's collapsed in on itself, but it didn't have enough mass to form a black hole. So it's like not quite a black hole. So it still throws off massive gravitational waves, but it's not as far reaching quite as a black hole would be. And they're only about the radius, let's say typically about 18 miles. So they're tiny.
Wow.
Yeah. They're tiny and they're throwing off these massive gravitational waves, but just not enough. Like a black hole, you know, is so massive and the gravity pull is so strong that it distorts, it distorts photons. It absorbs light. Neutron stars don't have that capability, but it still throws off a lot of gravity and a lot of radiation. So that's kind of what we're talking about. So not quite as bad as a black star as a black hole, but still not good.
Well, and our understanding of a black hole, I think, is a little askew anyway, because I mean, like the heart of the Milky Way is a black hole and we haven't gone anywhere.
Well, we're on the fringe, so.
Right. Yeah. When did you say that this one started? The 1970s?
2007 is when, 2007. Well, this particular one, they don't know.
Okay.
They just think it's coming from a neutron star, but they didn't really discover these fast radio bursts until 2007. It's not from the same thing.
Yeah, we didn't have this right instrumentation.
Probably, yeah.
Or aimed in the right direction or whatever.
Yeah.
Interesting, because I thought that, what they call it, the wow signal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a fast radio burst, but it was in the 70s or 80s, right?
Right. So. It was... That was a signal. That was at Arecibo,
mm-hmm. Which is down right now.
Yeah, and the WOW signal. I think the WOW signal was just a radio wave burst. It wasn't necessarily the fast radio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Strong narrowband radio signal is the way it's set. So yeah. So it wasn't a fast burst necessarily. But then again, did we have the technology to differentiate those things at that point? Probably not. So it could have been, but yeah. So that's kind of where it is.
So I think that's all we have time for. So we may continue this at some other time, but this has been a whole lot of fun. Thank you very much for listening to What in the World. I have been Ayama Natara. We have Dave Burke.
Hello.
And Lisa Fritz.
And goodbye.
And please join us next time.